ماندگاری. Stay tuned.
مراقب لطافت روح همسرانمون باشیم. لطافت رو مراقبت میخواد.
People, especially husbands, have to take care of their wives' delicate and fine souls. Men have to be careful with their words. Some words are sharper than the knife, and they scratch the delicate soul of the women. The words that are used by men have to be soft and empty of any kind of harshness. This way, a peaceful relation is established between a wife and a husband.
باید زبان روح لطیف همسرانتون رو.
Men must not bother their delicate wives with their tongues. Harsh words and hard looks must be avoided in encountering the women. Allah has created women with a delicate and fine soul. Order and disciplinary behavior is not the solution to peaceful relations between the spouses. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Ulema's Speech, which was the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hojjatul Islam Mandegari. To find out more about our program on Call of Islam page, IRIB English Radio, log on to our website, parstoday.com/en Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line. thousands of Moroccans have staged demonstrations across the North African country to reiterate their unwavering support for the Palestinian cause and voice outrage at the U.S.-sponsored normalization of diplomatic relations with Israel on its second anniversary. People from all strata of society heeded a call by the Moroccan Front in support of Palestine and against normalization, took part in nationwide rallies in almost 30 cities to show solidarity with Palestinians and censure Rabat's normalization of ties with the Tel Aviv regime. Protesters converged outside the Parliament of Morocco premises in the capital Rabat, where they chanted slogans in condemnation of the normalization and demanded the reversal of the agreement. The demonstrators waved national Palestinian flags and held up placards that read, "Normalization is treacherous and the struggle will carry on until the normalization is revoked" in Arabic. The participants also set fire to the Israeli flag in front of the legislature's building. The people of Morocco have repeatedly expressed their opposition to the agreement by holding demonstrations and protests. The Moroccan Front in support of Palestine and against normalization said normalization with the regime is passionately opposed by the whole country. On December 2020, Israel and Morocco announced the resumption of diplomatic relations after their suspension in 2000 following the outbreak of the Second Palestinian Intifada. The two agreed to normalize relations by signing a deal brokered by the U.S., making the North African country the fourth Arab state to strike such a deal with the regime. The others were the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, and Sudan. As part of the accord, Washington agreed to recognize Morocco's sovereignty over the Western Sahara region, which has been at the center of a dispute with neighboring Algeria. Algiers had condemned the U.S. decision, saying it had no legal effect because it contradicts UN resolutions, especially UN Security Council resolutions on Western Sahara. Morocco and Algeria have long been at odds over the disputed territory of Western Sahara, while Algiers-backed Polisario Front is seeking independence from Rabat's rule. Algeria cut diplomatic ties with Morocco in August 2021, citing hostile acts. Rabat controls over 80% of the territory and is pushing for autonomy under its sovereignty. The Polisario Front, however, wants a UN-sponsored referendum on self-determination. Morocco, like any other Arab country that has recognized Israel, insists it will still work for a two-state solution, but this time by engaging with Israel rather than boycotting it. Morocco clearly decided that developing its economic ties with Israel and winning U.S. recognition of its sovereignty in Western Sahara were too important to pass up. According to an opinion poll conducted by the Arab Barometer, 59% of Moroccans say they are hostile to normalization between Rabat and Tel Aviv. This shows a marked discrepancy between official authorities and Moroccan public opinion. The chasm was further exposed by the rise of several political parties that have accused the Moroccan state of betraying the Palestinian cause and collaborating with Israeli settlers. For example, the Justice and Development Party called for the closure of the Israeli liaison office during the bombing of Gaza last year. The Unified Socialist Party and the Socialist Democratic Vanguard Party showed their opposition to the rapprochement with Israel as well. They called it an illegitimate agreement. With all the opposition and outrage over inking the normalization agreement with Israel, why should Rabat do this? While the normalization was enacted in December 2020, bilateral relations between Morocco and Israel had never fully ceased in the past. In fact, in 2014, hundreds of diplomatic letters leaked by a Moroccan activist revealed that the two had been maintaining an ongoing political dialogue. Similarly, Israeli records reported $37 million US dollars in trade with Morocco in 2017, as well as signing of several trade and economic agreements. The diplomatic normalization was simply an opportunity for the kingdom to recognize and strengthen a cooperation that has always existed.
This Christmas is not a time for cheers and festivities for many in the U.S. A hunger crisis is affecting U.S. households. Food insecurity is already a critical problem affecting millions of Americans. One of the most typical factors affecting people suffering from food insecurity this time of the year are extreme winter conditions. But this year especially, many are suffering from hunger and high food prices due to unprecedented inflation that has gripped the U.S.
The gas, the food, everything, milk, egg, everything is it's high now.
It is concerning, so I always shop online to make sure that I can find the best prices for groceries and for, like, gas as well.
Last year, more than 33 million Americans lived in food-insecure households, including 9 million children. The figure dropped in 2021, thanks to COVID relief programs. One also does not need to look any further than U.S.'s food assistance program called SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, to see the severity of the problem. The federal government increased SNAP by 12.5% this fall, adjusted to the rate of inflation. In the fiscal year 2021, SNAP served an average of 41.5 million people per month. The U.S. President Joe Biden may boast of a minor drop in inflation.
And yesterday, we got data that showed that manufacturing orders were up, but cost increases in supply chain items were beginning to ease. The week before that, we got data showing that price increase may be beginning to ease as well.
But the fact of the matter is that the U.S. population is suffering from poverty, unemployment, a lack of affordable housing, and lack of access to health care. This is on top of systemic racial inequities. All of these factors have driven food insecurity that affects around 10% of U.S. households. Many people in the UK are also struggling to make ends meet during Christmas time, especially when it comes to food. That is since the UK economy is suffering from negative economic growth that has led many to be food insecure. Driven mainly by soaring energy prices, UK inflation has been running high in 2022, reaching successive new records. In October, households paid 88.9% more on average for electricity, gas, and other fuels than a year ago. So it is natural then that there has been a multifold increase when it comes to people going to food banks. One sobering statistic is that there are now more food banks than McDonald's in the UK. Between April and September, more than 320,000 people in the UK walked into food banks of Trussell Trust, a leading charity fighting against hunger, for the first time, and 1.3 million emergency food parcels were provided across the country. Yet it appears that in the UK, things are a lot worse when it comes to energy bills, especially during the winter time. Families across the UK have to juggle household incomes and make a choice between staying warm or buying food.
So across the UK, we have what we call fuel poverty, which is if you have to spend 10% of your income to afford a decent level of heat and power, you're regarded as being in fuel poverty. September 2021, there are about 4 million households across the UK in fuel poverty.
And that is quite a startling fact, considering how the UK is part of the G7 group of countries. Total wages in the UK have also fallen by 3.9% annually in the quarter to October, accounting for inflation, making the cost of living crisis worse for the average Brit. The natural question is, how did things get down to this, not only for the UK or Europe, but for many other parts of the world, especially during Christmas? Putting COVID aside, the U.S.-backed Ukraine conflict is one major reason, driving up energy prices and hence inflation. Christmas is known to be a time of giving, yet major donations have been going to Ukraine instead of citizens of the donating countries. The Kiel Institute has tracked 93.8 billion euros from 40 countries. Out of that, 52.3 billion euros came from the United States, 29.2 billion euros from the European Union, and 12.3 billion euros from other countries, mostly the United Kingdom.
The salami tactic that Wang Yi is accusing the U.S. of using refers to a practice of using a series of small actions to achieve a much larger end goal that would otherwise be difficult to achieve using one large action. Yi's comments undermine the recent attempts by the leaders of the two biggest economies in the world to reconcile their differences when Joe Biden and Xi Jinping recently met. During Xi Jinping's first in-person meeting with the U.S. president since 2017, the issue of Taiwan was raised. China believes that the U.S. is slowly but surely trying to chip away at China's authority over Taiwan, the incredibly significant industrial island that China deems as its own territory. President Xi calls Taiwan its first red line that the U.S. would be wise not to cross. The intensity of the rhetoric used by both parties to describe the actions of the other party is also escalating. As Joe Biden objected to China's, quote, coercive and increasingly aggressive actions towards Taiwan, Wang Yi told Blinken that the U.S. shouldn't continue, quote, old routine of unilateral bullying. He also said that the U.S. should not be blinded by ideological prejudices and stop putting obstacles to bilateral relations. Prior to his phone call with Antony Blinken, Wang Yi had already met with the U.S. ambassador to China, Nicholas Burns. During that meeting, he noted that the U.S. and China cannot change each other, and the U.S. shouldn't think about thwarting China all the time. This kind of rhetoric is reflective of the frayed relationship between the two superpowers that are a result of U.S. crackdown on Chinese tech companies, human rights issues, and perhaps the most important of all, the issue of Taiwan, and the U.S. constantly undermining the One China policy. The U.S. has recently put major restrictions on some major Chinese tech firms, including Huawei and ZTE, to the point that their products, along with some other brands, can't even be exported to the U.S. The previous bans that were imposed on these companies during Donald Trump's presidency when anti-China rhetoric began were a lot less restrictive. On the topic of human rights, just in the wake of April's shooting incident in New York, the U.S. State Department released reports on human rights situation in other countries, including China, with a handful of accusations thrown in the mix. China rebutted Washington's claims against it by pointing out to its failures in upholding the very human rights they have always championed. The issue of Taiwan is a bit more complicated. Site of U.S. Department of State, you will find the following paragraph on the U.S.'s supposed official position towards China and Taiwan. The United States' approach to Taiwan has remained consistent across decades and administrations. The United States has a long-standing one-China policy, which is guided by the Taiwan Relations Act, the three U.S.-China joint communique, and the six assurances. We oppose any unilateral changes to the status quo from either side. We do not support Taiwan independence, and we expect cross-strait differences to be resolved by peaceful means. While the document reads that the U.S. does not support Taiwan's independence, a July 2007 Congressional Research Service report confirms that U.S. policy does not, in fact, recognize China's sovereignty over Taiwan. The document further reads, consistent with the Taiwan Relations Act, the United States makes available defense articles and services as necessary to enable Taiwan to maintain a sufficient self-defense capability and maintain our capacity to resist any resort to force or other forms of coercion that would jeopardize security or the social or economic system of Taiwan. The Taiwan Relations Act was passed right around the time the U.S. recognized the People's Republic of China in 1979. Its intent was so that the U.S. can maintain commercial, cultural, and other relations with Taiwan through unofficial relations without government representation and without formal diplomatic ties. China has since viewed the TRA as, quote, an unwarranted intrusion by the United States into the internal affairs of China. as the U.S. continued to supply Taiwan with arms and, more recently, had official meetings with the leader of the island. And this is where Wang Yi's rhetoric towards Blinken starts to make sense. The U.S. has been playing fast and loose with China's sovereignty over Taiwan and the One China policy. China is on a short fuse, and it remains to be seen when their patience will run out.
An investigation has shed light on the complicity of social media giant Twitter in the propaganda of the U.S. military in the West Asia region. The investigation says Twitter helped the U.S. military amplify its propaganda campaigns in this region, allowing fake accounts to push pro-U.S. narratives. The probe has been carried out by a journalist and is based on internal documents released by Elon Musk, who took over as Twitter's CEO in October. Musk has released the documents as an effort to boost transparency about the social media platform's operations under the previous management. The investigation says Twitter secretly created a special whitelist exempting accounts run by U.S. Central Command or CENTCOM for spam and abuse flags. The move allowed those accounts greater visibility on the platform. It says Twitter quietly introduced the feature in 2017. The measure was introduced after U.S. military officials asked the company to improve the visibility of Arab language accounts used to amplify certain messages. Those included promoting U.S. military narratives, anti-Iran messages, and support for the U.S. and Saudi-backed war in Yemen. According to the report, CENTCOM concealed its ownership of the accounts. In some cases, it used fake pictures and bios to give them the impression that they were run by civilians in the region. The social media giant tolerated the presence of the accounts on the platform until at least May 2022. Twitter has long pledged to shut down all state-backed disinformation and propaganda efforts. For example, in 2018, Twitter suspended accounts that were allegedly linked to Russia's propaganda efforts. But these rules and suspensions have not been applied to the American military efforts.
And the story also looks at the kind of hypocritical promises and pledges by Twitter. Twitter, since 2016, has promised to crack down on state-backed influence operations, to shut down covert propaganda, and they brag all the time about shutting down Russian or Venezuelan or even Thai secret Twitter accounts that are run by the military.
Azerbaijan.
Yeah, Azeris are always doing this as well.
Yeah.
But really, the U.S. is doing this. And Twitter, even though they promised to shut down all state-backed influence operations, they've worked hand in glove with the U.S. military, giving them special privileges for their fake Twitter accounts, these fake personalities that kind of make organic-looking conversations in Yemen or Syria or Iraq.
The finding of this research appeared to corroborate a major report published in August by online security researchers affiliated with the Stanford Internet Observatory. That report claimed that thousands of accounts that they suspected to be part of a state-backed information operation. It said many of those accounts used photorealistic human faces generated by artificial intelligence and were connected with an online ecosystem that included fake news websites, meme accounts on Telegram and Facebook, and online personalities. They all echoed Pentagon messages and included anti-Iran messages. Some of them accused Iran of threatening Iraq's water security. Others promoted allegations that Iran was harvesting the organs of Afghan refugees. In the summer of 2020, officials from Facebook reportedly identified fake accounts attributed to CENTCOM's influence operation on its platform. Reports show in 2020, Facebook and Twitter executives were invited by the Pentagon's top attorneys to attend classified briefings in a sensitive, compartmented information facility. The result of that meeting was that many of the fake accounts remained active for at least another year. Some of the accounts on the CENTCOM list remain active even now.
اقرأ بسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
قد دعوتك ربي بقرآن جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسان ودعوتك ربي بقرآن.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم. Respected brothers and sisters, dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah and welcome to Let's Recite the Quran Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions held by IRIB English Radio in cooperation with Sevier International Schools Network. I'm really happy to have some of the students of Sevier International School here, and I really welcome them, Brother Hussein Ruhullah, Brother Ali Nasir, Brother Fawad Haider, and Brother Hassan Nasrullah. So, welcome, dear brothers, and how are you, Hussein?
Alhamdulillah, sir.
Alhamdulillah. Alhamdulillah. Thank you, Hassan.
Fine, sir. How are you?
Ali Nasir?
Yes, sir. Alhamdulillah.
Alhamdulillah. Fawad Haider?
Fine, sir.
Okay. Everyone is doing well. Alhamdulillah. We hope you're doing well and you're safe. So today, inshallah, the same as our previous sessions, we'll have Ayah 165 of Surah Al-Baqarah, page 25. So, brothers and sisters, before we start, I really recommend you have your Quran with you. Turn to page 25 of Quran Kareem, Surah Al-Baqarah, verse 165. So, everyone, let's all together listen to the recitation before we start.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. ومن الناس من يتخذ من دون الله أندادا يحبونهم كحب الله والذين آمنوا أشد حبا لله ولو يرى الذين ظلموا إذ يرون العذاب أن القوة لله جميعا وأن الله شديد العذاب.
That was nice. I will be reciting. Make sure, brothers, you listen and repeat. And our brothers and sisters who are listening to us right now on IRB English Radio, they will also practice with us, okay?
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
ومن الناس من يتخذ من دون الله أندادا يحبونهم كحب الله
ومن الناس من يتخذ من دون الله أندادا يحبونهم كحب الله
والذين آمنوا أشد حبا لله
والذين آمنوا أشد حبا لله
ولو يرى الذين ظلموا إذ يرون العذاب أن القوة لله جميعا
ولو يرى الذين ظلموا إذ يرون العذاب أن لله جميعا
أن القوة لله جميعا وأن الله شديد العذاب
أن القوة لله جميعا وأن الله شديد العذاب
أحسنتم ما شاء الله Thank you so much Allah bless you inshallah Allah Almighty says in this ayah وَمِنَ النَّاسِ مَنْ يَتَّخِذُ مِنْ دُونِ اللَّهِ أَنْدَادًا يُحِبُّونَهُمْ كَحُبِّ اللَّهِ Allah Almighty says Among the people there are those who set up or those who see, compares, okay, partners besides Allah Almighty. They love them as if they love their Lord, okay? What does it mean? It means that among the people, there are some people, okay, that they kind of believe in some other gods, partners, okay? They believe partners. It means they do not believe in Allah, they believe in others, okay? Like, for example, they believe in their, what do we say, politicians, their leaders. They love their leaders. They love, for example, the statues, idols, okay? They love whatever, money. They love their life. They love their wife. They love whatever. So they love the love that they should have for God, for Allah. They do not have this. They love others, okay, as if their Lord. It means they worship them even, okay, as their Lord, which is what? Shirk. Yes, which is shirk. And beside them, there are other people. وَالَّذِينَ آمَنُوا But those who believe in God. Those who believe in God, what do? They أَشَدُّ حُبًّا لِلَّهِ Okay, their love is for Lord. The most loving thing in their life is Allah. Okay? So, there is a difference between them, yes? Yeah? Yes. Yeah, of course. It's clear. وَلَوْ يَرَى الَّذِينَ ظَلَمُوا Though the wrongdoers will see, okay, those who love other things instead of God, okay, as their Lord. So, they will see. When will they understand? That Allah has the all power, that Allah is the one who should be loved. Okay? When do they see? وَلَوْ يَرَى الَّذِينَ ظَلَمُوا إِذْ يَرَوْنَ الْعَذَابِ When they see a punishment, when they see a hard time, okay? They will return to Allah Almighty. Sorry, Lord. Sorry. We have to love you. Their wife will never help them, especially in the day of judgment. That time they will understand that the one who is helping is God. Nobody else. Okay? If the prophets, the imams, even if they come and they apply shafa'ah, it's bi-idhnillah. Without idhn of Allah Almighty, they will never do it. Okay? Man dhal ladhi yashfa'u illa bi-idhni. Yes? There is no one to apply shafa'ah except with the permission of Allah Almighty. Okay? Who will help us? Allah. In this world, Allah. So Allah is the one who is helping us, okay? So we should love Allah Almighty. And إِذْ يَرَوْنَ الْعَذَابِ They will see the عَذَابِ And they will say أَنَّ الْقُوَّةِ لِلَّهِ جَمِيعًا Oh, the power is, the strength is all for Allah Almighty. In Islamic beliefs, you can understand, you can learn the differences, you can learn a lot of things about them. So refer to the Islamic beliefs and the Tafasir book. We don't have much time. We'll go to the explanations, okay? The explanation of the تجويد رؤوس قلب بالحق تعلق وبغارح راء تألق يبكي يسأل خالقه فأتاه الوحي فأشرق اقرأ اقرأ Let's recite the Quran
اقرأ بسم ربك الذي خلق
ومن الناس نون مشدد here ومن الناس make sure it's pronounced with a nasal sound. من يتخذ نون ساكن plus يا من يتخذ إدغام with غنة nasal yes. sound. ومن الناس من يتخذ Do not prolong the إدغام sound a lot, okay? Just for two counts. من يتخذ It's enough. Not من No. Alright? من دون الله نون ساكن plus دال
إخفى
من nasal sound it produces. But you gotta hide the sound of noon. Okay? The difference between idgham and ikhfa is this. In idgham, you merge the sound. In ikhfa, you hide the sound. You don't change it or merge it to anything else. May, you change noon. The noon is merged into ya. It has a ya sound. And here, min, you have the noon sound, but you hide it a bit. You don't merge it to dal. May, mad, no. May, sorry. Mid, you don't say. Min, you hide the sound. Min dunillahi, again. The, then, plus ya, and da, day, it will merge it.
Yes.
Yuhibbunahum ka hubbillah salah. The word salah on the top, it says, it's a sign of stopping. Yeah, it says?
Continuing.
Yeah, continuing is better. Wasl is better than waqf. Continuing is better than stopping here. Wallazina amanu. There is a mad, okay? But it's not wajib because. Why? Why?
Because Hamza is in a different
word. In another word. It's not in the word which. Waw mad is there, okay? Amanu, waw mad, plus Hamza in the next word. So they are not in the same word. Munfasil, they are separate from each other. Next one, amanu ashaddu hubban tanween, plus lillah, starts with lam. Hubban lillah, so merge them, yes? Hubban lillah, without a nasal sound. You don't say hubban lillah, no. It's not nasal sound. You don't produce, okay? Because lam and ra, if they come after tanween or noon sakin, you just merge them and no nasal sound. Yes? So, next one. Walaw yaral, yara, ral, yaral, yara, it's alif mad, alif maqsura. But because you have hamzatul wasl, you skip hamzatul wasl and you skip this alif mad. Walaw yaral ladhina zalamu idh yarun. Again, mad is jaiz. إِذْ يَرَوْنَ الْعَذَابَ أَنَّ nasal sound أَنَّ الْقُوَّةَ لِلَّهِ لِلَّهِ. The lam in the word Allah is pronounced lightly with an E sound. لِلَّهِ sound. Why? Because there is? Huh? Tell me.
كَسْرَ.
A كَسْرَ sound before. So, لِلَّهِ جَمِيعًا plus wow.
Jami'an.
Wa anna allaha. Anna allaha. Here, the lam in the word Allah is pronounced
heavily
with an ah sound. Why? Because there is a fatha sound. So the rule was this, that if before the word Allah or Allahumma, if you have a fatha sound or a dhamma sound, pronounce the lam in the word Allah or Allahumma with a heavy sound, with an ah sound. But if there is a kasra sound, produce the lam with an a sound. La, bismillah. Okay? Anna Allah, a, a. Alright? So, wa anna Allah shadeedul adhab. B. Huh? Echoing sound on the letter ba. Because it changes to sukun. Yes? The haraka changes to sukun. So, guys, I hope, inshallah, you have learned the tajweed rules we have mentioned here. Please recite it with tajweed rules, okay, which are important. And if you didn't know any of them, you can listen again to this episode, okay? And inshallah, in the coming sessions, of course, we'll have the next tajweed rules again we'll mention, okay, in the coming verses. This ayah was a long ayah. We had a short explanation. Make sure you refer to the Tafasir book, okay, for the explanations. So thank you so much for being with us, brothers and sisters. Please stay with IRB English Radio on Call of Islam Radio. And every day, inshallah, we'll have a Quranic session for you. Thank you so much for joining us today, brothers Hussein, Hassan, Ali Nasir, Fawad Haider. Thanks for being with us. Anything to say?
No.
Okay. Have a nice day. Have a nice night. Every night, every day. Stay safe, inshallah. See you. والحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل.
Let's recite the Quran. a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools.
فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نرقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان
Part 1.
He was born in a village in the heart of the desert. At the age of 5, he became a shepherd in the village. A young shepherd who grazed sheep with his bare feet, and at night his mother would remove the thorns off his hands and feet with a needle. During the entire fall and winter, he worked hard and his hands were frostbitten due to severe cold. Every time the teacher hit him on the back of his hands with a piece of wet branch from a pomegranate tree, and he would start crying out loud, his father would shout from the yard in his house, "Don't hit him. Have a little fairness. Qasem's hands are not dirty. His skin has become black." And as far as he could remember, he was always waiting for the spring to come to bring warmth with it. Even though his hands never fired a bullet, they prevented many hands from shedding the blood of innocent people. And after he fell, people in the world didn't shake hands warmly for a long time. A man with a bright future, with a stature to stand tall. When he was 13, he learned about the secret of his parents' whispers at night. He found out that his dad owed 900 tomans to the agricultural bank and could not repay it. He decided to drop out of school and go to the city to find a job and lend it to his father. It was the first time he was shouldering a big responsibility, and he succeeded. At the age of 15, he enrolled in the Kerman Workers Club in the field of karate. On his card, it was written, "Become strong if you want comfort in this world, because in the system of nature, those who are weak will be trampled upon." This became the motto in his life. He had to make his shoulders stronger for bigger responsibilities. When the revolution happened, he wanted to be an IRGC soldier, but with his wavy hair and his short-sleeved shirt, and with his chest and arms revealing, his appearance didn't fit in with the people in the IRGC. That's why he was rejected by the selection committee of the IRGC. But he insisted, and it worked.
Qasim became an IRGC guard. It was in his fate that his right hand was injured. It happened on the first day of the first operation he participated in. So he could no longer fire a bullet with that hand. But because of his experience in military affairs and his ability to lead forces, he remained on the front lines. Although he was a military commander, he made friends with each and every one of his forces and established personal and emotional relationships with them. In the first opportunity, he went to Mecca. After that, everyone knew him by the title Haj Qasim. During the 8 years of the Iraqi-imposed war, he fought in different places. Rivers, deserts, wetlands, and mountains. In his conversation on the radio, he would never say go. He would say, come here. Whenever the situation would become hard, he showed his grandeur, and no one would dare oppose him. Everyone knew that if Qasim raised his right eyebrow, there would be no room for ifs or buts, and no one could say no. He was always behind the first embankment during the operations. During the 8 years that Qasim and Iranian forces were fighting with Saddam's army on the country's western borders, the drug mafia had invaded Iran's eastern and southeastern provinces bordering Afghanistan and Pakistan. So the IRGC commissioned a base to fight the mafia, the Quds base. And Qasim became the commander of the base, where the forces of his division were all from those provinces. Qasim's new mission was harder than the war. The drug mafia had hired mainly the oppressed and indigenous people of different villages of the provinces, and the difficulty of Qasim's mission was that he had to clear these provinces with maximum peace and minimum human casualties. Although the heads of the mafia groups tried to put Qasim in a tight spot by threatening him, he did his job fearlessly. He was close to death many times, and once his children were almost taken hostage. Once armed thugs took 90 police forces hostage and took him deep into Pakistani territory, Qasim followed them on a helicopter, and after finding their hideout, he got them released. Now the mafia heads knew that they were not safe from Qasim even across the border. He warned the rest of the miscreant gangs to either lay down their arms or wait for the consequences of their evil acts. Now, once again, it was time for forgiveness and kindness. Qasim tried to build an honorable life for the tribes through agriculture by building hundreds of water wells.
He did not even neglect to take care of the family of the head of one of the most notorious armed gangs who was killed by his forces. So Qasim succeeded in restoring security to the southern and eastern provinces of Iran after 7 years, with the least casualties. But this was not the end of his mission. February 1998, Qasim was appointed as commander of the Quds Force. The unit was responsible for the IRGC's foreign operations from Afghanistan to Lebanon. What was the mystery in the name that was tied to Qasim's life? Starting military training from the Quds garrison in Kerman, commanding the battle in Operation Tariq al-Quds, fighting the drug mafia in the Quds base, and now commanding the Quds force. There were many such codes in Qasim's life, most importantly his right hand he could not shoot with. The beginning of Qasim's new mission coincided with the beginning of the construction of U.S. bases in Iran's neighboring countries. Al-Qaeda also infiltrated the region and sowed the seeds of religious discord. Qasim had to do something. He first flew on a helicopter through the mountains of Tajikistan to go visit Ahmad Shah Massoud. The Sunni lion of the Panjshir Valley, who had been in isolation for some time. Qasim saved Massoud from isolation by strengthening his fighting power and supporting his forces. We do not even want to discuss what it means to transfer heavy military equipment to Afghanistan in just 48 hours. Qasim's next step was to connect the nucleus of resistance to other parts of his mission. Next destination was the Iraqi Kurdistan, Iran's traditional ally. There, he strengthened his ties with the leaders of the region, as he did in Afghanistan. Training and sending military equipment and tools deepened Qasim's relationship with the Kurds. Qasim's next step was to go to Lebanon. And it was there that he found what he was looking for. Imad Mughniyeh, an omnipotent commander like himself. And Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, who was a strategist, a political theorist who was aware of the equations of the region and the world, and at the same time, a full-fledged warrior. Those two men encouraged Qasim, the companions who never separated from him, and only death left a gap between them. It was not long after Haj Qasim, Imad, and Sayyid got to know each other that the Israeli army withdrew from Lebanon after 18 years of occupation without achieving anything. Yeah.
6 years later, the small Hezbollah became so strong that Israel decided to eradicate it with a massive offensive. Qasem wasn't someone who would sit by and just watch the battle from a distance. Weeks after the start of the war, Israel did everything it could by massacring the people and destroying infrastructure to force Lebanon to concede defeat. In the victory celebration, only a few people knew that someone named Ahmad Mughniyeh existed. The specter of resistance had a, quote-unquote, strong supporter throughout the war. False and deceitful claims of societies that champion freedom of speech, but in practice resort to any trick to control public opinion. Leaders who ordered the assassination of General Soleimani also prevent the distribution of information related to martyr Soleimani. Virtual Flags is foremost a documentation of the West's cultural and media war against the positions of the Islamic Republic of Iran, rather than simply a documentation of the mourning for martyr General Soleimani.
IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.